In 2020, protests erupted across the country after a Minneapolis police officer murdered George Floyd, and the country saw the video. There were more, Breonna Taylor, Dante Wright, Rayshard Brooks, to name a few. The media spotlight on Black Lives Matter protests and police brutality changed the narrative around what it means to be a police officer in America and led to things like the movement to defund the police, which calls for funds to be reallocated to other efforts like mental health treatment and public health. And according to our next guest's research, it shifted the way young people in particular see law enforcement.
In one of our recent studies, we sampled about 800 youth between the ages of 13 to 17, and we actually found that 97% of these youth from across the country were vicariously exposed to police contact through some kind of social media. But it's not just social media. Kids are also exposed to police from what's happening with their friends, with their families, and with their neighbors. We know that when youth hear that others have been treated unfairly, or that they themselves have witnessed it or experienced it, they then report worse perceptions of law enforcement.
That's ASU criminology and criminal justice professor Adam Fine, and much of his work focuses on young people's perceptions of law enforcement and its implications. At the same time we're seeing those opinions change, police departments around the country have seen waves of officers retire in the wake of these protests, and many are having a tough time recruiting new officers to remain fully staffed. This year, the Phoenix Police Department is offering cash bonuses for the first time ever for new hires and referrals. So how are these two things connected? And what does it mean for the future of law enforcement? I spoke with Fine more about it.
Kids don't live in a vacuum. It's very likely that the shows that they're watching, the media they're being exposed to, is impacting their views of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But they're around their friends. They're around their family. They're in their neighborhoods. They're in their schools. They're experiencing police contact personally and vicariously almost daily. 97% of youth in our sample were vicariously exposed to police contact through social media. And what we actually found, which is fascinating, is that the more that youth reported that they had been exposed to negative social media content about policing, the worse they viewed police and the less willing they were to become a police officer.
So there's already very clearly that link, right, between negative perceptions of police and what they see in the world around them and on the news and in pop culture, et cetera, and willingness to ever go in that direction as a profession.
Yes, and a lot of this research is ongoing. For instance, this is a correlational study that we are still working on, and we're building a body of research because there's very little research when it comes to understanding why youth today want to become law enforcement or want to go into those alternative to policing public safety careers.
What do you mean when you say alternative to policing public safety careers? Like, are those things that people generally know exist?
People don't generally know what alternative policing solutions actually look like. Part of that is because they're pretty new, but a large part of it is because of a marketing issue. There have been these alternative solutions in practice for decades. For instance, there's CAHOOTS out in Oregon that's been operating alongside or instead of police for quite a while. What these things are trained individuals who are, for instance, sometimes mental health, public safety professionals, who are unarmed and are sent to handle certain types of calls that we might not actually want armed law enforcement to handle. So if someone is in a mental health crisis, but they're not necessarily posing a danger to others around them, well then, do we really want police officers to be handling that call? Do police officers themselves actually want to handle that call? When I speak to law enforcement that I've worked with on projects, they don't necessarily want to be handling all types of calls, but they are seen as our multi-tool when they're not necessarily trained to be that kind of multi-tool. Hmm. And we also have this issue where law enforcement agencies are not fully staffed. So it's a struggle for them to actually make it out to all of the different calls of service that they're supposed to respond to. So some jurisdictions across the country have started to focus on these alternative to policing, these alternative solutions for public health and safety.
So is it a matter of sort of, in looking at this through the lens of like what the future of public safety looks like, right? Is it a matter of education trying to, if you can't recruit a ton of people anymore to be police officers, do you envision the future of this to look like, you know, smaller police forces and more of these alternatives?
Nobody knows what the future of law enforcement and public safety looks like. Hmm. And I don't think any one person should know or should say this is how things should be. Every community should have a say and a voice in how they want to handle public safety within their own jurisdiction. for a lot of jurisdictions, that's ended up looking like they want to have both traditional law enforcement with armed officers to handle certain types of calls, as well as having these alternative solutions, such as mobile crisis intervention teams. A key issue that we're facing right now is that many people, particularly youth, don't necessarily know that these are options or that these options are actually being discussed within their particular community. So when we think about what the future of public safety looks like, on the one hand, we're already facing a crisis in recruiting law enforcement in the traditional sense. And we're thinking about creating more of these alternative solutions for public health and safety, alternative to policing, but youth don't necessarily even know that those might be options for them. Beyond that, we have virtually no idea, because there are very few studies looking at why youth actually would want to go into law enforcement or these alternative to police careers. That's what my lab is starting to study.
So in that study, I mean, you're breaking ground here, obviously, but what are you hoping to find, like pathways forward so that there are, you know, viable options that people know about in terms of how to go into public safety in the future?
One of the things that, not necessarily that we hope to find, but that we might find, is the influence of this notion of the warrior versus the guardian. The warrior mindset, on the one hand, emphasizes officer safety and prioritizes crime fighting. The guardian is on the other, and it sees themselves more as a protector, emphasizing building relationships with the community and prioritizing protecting civilians from unnecessary indignity and contact. So when police act like warriors and are portrayed as such, they might be impacting youth's perceptions of what police are, and then their interest in wanting to actually become law enforcement. One thing that we're paying attention to in our research is potentially this divergence effect, where youth who identify more with this police warrior mindset might want to actually become law enforcement, and those who identify more with the guardian might want to pursue careers in these alternative to police solution tracks. And we don't have data to speak to this quite yet, but what that would really mean is that if only the youth, only the kids who are interested in this warrior mindset then go on to become law enforcement, and the ones who are interested in more of the guardian mindset don't actually want to go into law enforcement and only go into these alternative careers, well, then that means that law enforcement agencies would be further distilled into a higher proportion of warriors.
I guess my last question then for you, Adam, would be hopefully a hopeful one. I mean, like, there's a lot up in the air here, and it does seem like this is a moment at which law enforcement will look different in the future. Things have shifted and are changing as we speak. Is there an opportunity there?
In one of the most interesting studies I've read recently, Tom O'Brien, Tracy Mears, and Tom Tyler sampled about 700 Black adults, just came out in 2020, and they found that when police leaders apologize and acknowledge responsibility for mistrust with the communities, they can enhance cooperation of people who already do not trust the police. This is a critical study. It shows us that police departments can begin building trust and cooperation with communities when they apologize, when they acknowledge responsibility for mistrust that's been happening. I think that's one step in the right direction. I think if police departments pay more attention to better serving the communities that they are supposed to be serving, if they focus more on building relationships, if they focus on encouraging community participation and community voice, it will change in the long term youth's perceptions of them, because it will change the nature of that department and the nature of that department's relationship with the community.
That was my conversation with ASU Criminology and Criminal Justice Professor Adam Fine. He's got a book coming out soon called The Behavioral Code: The Hidden Ways That Law Makes Us Better or Worse. And this is the show.